Alan, thank you very much indeed. Our next speaker is Rob Prideaux. Rob is a director at the National Audit Office. He's senior research leader currently at RAND Europe on an 18-month secondment from the NAO, but he directed the NAO's value for money work on tax administration between 2012 and 2017. And he led the NAO's research and publications on HMRC's performance, including three major studies on tax reliefs. Rob.
Good evening, and it's nice to be back in the company of a lot of tax professionals, which I used to find myself in a lot when I was doing the NAO job for 5 years. For the last year, I've been out, John said, at RAND Europe. So forgive me for being a little bit rusty, possibly, in this space, but I thought it would be helpful just to give you all perspective from the NAO, John said, the public watchdog, on what we thought was important when we came to look at tax relief and, indeed, designed a series of pieces of work on tax reliefs over the last several years. I won't speak for all that long, but I just wanted to give you a sort of sense of our work and also some of the problems that we identified in the administration of tax reliefs. So the first thing to say is that we came at this work from when Margaret Hodge became chair of the Public Accounts Committee. You may recall she put a lot of emphasis on tax avoidance, particularly in tax evasion. And she was interested in some particular schemes that were in the public eye at the time. We were very keen not only to support her in the scrutiny she wanted to put on those things, but also to try and to bring some sort of systematic look at the way HMRC goes about the challenges of administering the tax system, which clearly are significant challenges. Clearly quite a lot of tax avoidance is in some way linked to a tax relief. At least a third of the spotlights that HMRC publishes, we found, had a tax relief at their heart. So we felt that this was a good area to focus on. And as Helen very eloquently said, we're talking about very big figures when we're talking about tax reliefs that are very significant policy instruments used by government. And we felt when we started to look at them and still felt when we concluded that that they are... They do get a great deal less scrutiny than public expenditure, for example. So, I mean, the first thing to say, as Helen already has, is that the Office of Tax Simplification identified over 1,000 reliefs. HMRC had a smaller sort of group that it flagged as reliefs at the time, but there are certainly a lot of them, and all are different. And as Helen also said, they're very challenging to categorise. I think it is worth taking the trouble to seek to do so, but there are definitely different interpretations one can put on what reliefs are for. And that's both those that are sometimes called tax expenditures that are seeking to achieve some sort of policy objectives, typically by behaviour change or by trying to reinforce certain behaviours. But there are also, among the structural reliefs, quite a lot of different objectives and also different mechanisms for those reliefs. We focused on tax expenditures because we felt that was the area that was closest to public policy instruments that equated in some way to public expenditure. And we found when we looked across all the reliefs that nearly 200 seemed to support that kind of objective, to support behaviour change towards a particular policy objective. That was definitely a subject of some discussion with HMRC and quite a lot of to and fro about really what the number was, whether was tax expenditure a meaningful term or not. But clearly those reliefs are trying to achieve something that the purely structural reliefs aren't. And I think, as Helen's slide earlier showed, there are quite a number that have a combination, bit of both in them. So those also make the task of categorisation even more challenging. The other thing to say is that we found what we tried to do, and should say at this point, the NAO's statutory constitution does prevent us from questioning policy objectives. So we never set out to try and question whether some reliefs should be on the statute. Our role was simply to look at how reliefs were administered by HMRC and to report on that. But clearly one of the aspects of that is to try and understand HMRC's responsibility to try and understand whether reliefs are achieving what is intended of them and are doing so at a reasonable cost without too much sort of leakage through avoidance, etc. We started by looking at reliefs and tried to identify the policy objectives, and it wasn't always straightforward to do so. In fact, in some cases, almost impossible. Some reliefs could go back hundreds of years, some of the agricultural reliefs, for example, so that in itself makes it difficult. Other reliefs have changed over time or been changed by the rules around them having changed, sometimes to pursue a particular new objective. So, for example, our first report in this area looked at gift aid and the reliefs around gift aid, and the principle that that donations to charity shouldn't be taxed was well established when gift aid was first created a long, long time ago. But some of the announcements by chancellors when changing gift aid, such as to make it available for corporations, clearly implied a desire to try and encourage more giving by businesses, for example. So you could detect some change and some additional sort of complexity in the policy objective, but it's never neatly documented anywhere. So one of the challenges is, if you're looking to evaluate a relief, is to really understand what it's for before you can really establish whether it's achieving its objective or not. The other thing to say is that the costs of a lot of tax reliefs are unknown. That's partly because with so many reliefs, it's impractical for HMRC to collect data through tax returns on all of them. So there's a relatively small proportion for which there is any firm data on the costs. At the time we did our work, there were about 180 reliefs had published costs, and quite a lot with a cost not known against them. What we did when we started to look systematically at reliefs was to look for evidence of active administration by HMRC. And we did that partly by taking samples of reliefs and looking in detail, and partly by asking about the sort of system for the management of reliefs. And we found very highly variable practice, including in the group that could be categorised as tax expenditures. So there are some cases where there's a specialist unit within HMRC that had been set up to administer and to very actively manage the relief. A good example of that, actually, is when you've talked about the R&D tax credits, which has one of the specialist units to manage that, and I think a similar unit or part of the same unit possibly now looking at patent box as well. And those teams would both look carefully at changes in the cost of the relief. They would look very carefully at how the relief was being used and do quite a bit of discussion with industry to understand how they were being used. They would also promote the reliefs and try and help businesses to understand how they might be used, and also to ensure compliance with them. So those are very actively managed. There were other reliefs that seemed to us that were trying to achieve policy objectives where there was almost no management at all in terms of any sort of active attempt to understand how the relief was working. It was more a case of just simply trying to detect any avoidance or evasion that might be going on. Those often the costs weren't known, and the impact of the relief really wasn't known, nor really did HMRC have the resources to find out, because the cost of doing evaluations on reliefs are generally pretty high and lead to quite variable sort of outcomes in terms of how conclusive they are. What we did find, what the slides I'm just about to show illustrate, is that the cost monitoring we think is important for reliefs. And the monitoring of costs, as I mentioned, was certainly when we started to look quite variable. And the first one I've just used to illustrate that, and these graphs are just taken directly from the NEA reports that we published in 2014 on the subject. So they are a bit dated, but I think they illustrate the case quite well. So this is the infamous film tax, which was probably one of the early cases to sort of hit the headlines in terms of some of the avoidance activity that took place. But I think that this is the trend line showing the cost of film tax, and it just really shows how volatile reliefs can be and how readily they'll be exploited if there are design weaknesses. So it shows how the annual cost of film tax release rose to over 650 million at its peak in 2006-07, which is interesting in that when film tax was introduced back in 1997, it was forecast to exist for about 3 years and to cost 30 million in total. Clearly this shows how the actual cost can be vastly in excess of what Treasury or HMRC predict when they introduce them. It also shows that despite attempts to actually more narrowly define the scope of the relief and to reduce the amount of avoidance activity, it takes a while sometimes before those measures actually take effect or actually produce the intended results. So there were changes made in 2002 and again in 2005 and 2007 to try and kind of curb the avoidance activity, which was quite well known about as early as about 2002 when the Treasury Committee first expressed concerns about abuse. But those measures clearly didn't really work until about 2007 when indeed the relief was quite thoroughly redesigned in order to focus on the producers of films rather than investors, which the old scheme had done. So you see how quickly when that happened the costs dropped back to closer to the level that HMRC had envisaged when relief was brought in. So then I'll move on to two other examples. And the first one, again, Helen's already talked about, entrepreneurs relief. And I'm not going to say anything about whether that relief in itself has merit, but just simply interesting to observe what happened in terms of its costs. So the cost of relief increased by fivefold in 5 years, roughly. And the increase was partly explained by increases, changes to the relief, increases in the lifetime limit for claiming entrepreneurs relief. However, this this chart plots the costs that were forecast by HMRC and Treasury as a result of the policy changes and changes in the limit, which is the yellow line at the bottom, and then the actual costs that were observed in the red line at the top. So the estimated cost of 2.9 billion in 2013-14 was three times more than the cumulative amount forecast as a result of those policy changes. Some of that is because, I mean, it is genuinely difficult to predict how people will use relief, so it's not easy to predict the future. Some of it we felt could have been done more realistically. So, for example, when some of the policy changes were introduced in around 2010 and later, what HMRC and Treasury didn't do was take into account the underestimates in their forecasts in the earlier years of the introduction of the relief. But really, it simply just shows that the amount of tax foregone for relief is difficult to predict, and we think there is quite a lot of value in active monitoring. One thing to say about entrepreneurs' relief, when we did this work a few years ago, HMRC and Treasury felt that it was too early in the life of the relief to really do any meaningful work about whether it was working as intended, and so that there was more evaluation to do. They had done some preliminary work in 2013 that identified that that the average age of beneficiaries had dropped from 59 to 53. So I'll leave you to decide what to conclude from that. The other thing, just to the other relief I wanted to mention before I finish, is share loss relief. And this one is a little different, but it just shows how our view really that monitoring of costs is a valuable aid to detect things that might be going wrong with the relief, such as tax abuse. Share loss relief allows a loss on disposal of shares in certain small unquoted trading companies to be set against income tax or corporation tax. And the objective of the relief from our discussion with HMRC was to reduce the financial risk of investment in smaller companies. What that chart very clearly shows is that dramatic peak in 2006-07, the value of share losses claimed in income tax calculations rose in real terms from 385 million to 1.2 billion in that year. Now, what's interesting is that although HMRC were aware of that, and the main reason were two very large avoidance schemes that were induced around that time, what they hadn't done was tried to estimate the costs of the relief. This is one which is classified as costs not known. So this graph was only produced through a one-off exercise HMRC did in 2013 to look back at the costs of this relief over time. And it was only that revealed the extent of the cost of these avoidance schemes. This doesn't mean HMRC had missed the fact they were addressing these avoidance schemes, they were tackling them, but what they couldn't know was the sort of proportion of the claims that might be related to such avoidance, because they weren't monitoring the costs. So really just wanted to give you a sense there of some of the issues that we found when looking at the cost of release and the case we felt there is for monitoring them more actively. I mean, in general, our view on tax reliefs is that more active administration was required, and HMRC now very much accepts that and has established a central team to oversee reliefs and improve the monitoring and also the information it publishes about reliefs and their effect. And I'm really, really pleased that's happened and wouldn't want to underestimate the scale of the challenge. Looking at HMRC's practice compared to other tax administrations across the world, there's good and bad in most tax administrations, and there's certainly a lot of good practice within HMRC. And it's good that we think that they're getting more systematic about this and sharing knowledge across the business between teams that monitor different reliefs. Just want to leave you with a couple of questions. First one, I mean, some countries treat tax reliefs much more similarly to public expenditure in the way they're scrutinised, in the information that's published about them. So should reliefs be treated more equivalently to public expenditure in the UK? Secondly, bear in mind that some of the specialist teams within HMRC already do this. Should reliefs more consistently be promoted to business taxpayers so that they can more easily use the reliefs, have better awareness that they exist and know how to use them? And thirdly, what's the future of reliefs post-Brexit? EU restrictions on state aid have been quite an important sort of influence on the way reliefs have been used to date, but will no longer apply. So is there scope for more scope to use reliefs in the future post-Brexit? Thank you.